Some of this you might have seen before, somewhere in the archives of your mind. And I want to call attention today to famous couples in the Bible. Tomorrow being Mother's Day, generally speaking, you don't have a mother unless there's a father. And so there's famous couples, and that would be Adam and Eve. And of course, they had the advantage of being created perfect, perfect specimens of human beings. And then I also put down that they didn't have any in-laws, so there wasn't any interference in the relationship. Sometimes that can be a good thing and sometimes ungood. So we have Adam and Eve as a famous couple in the Bible. We also have the example of Abraham and Sarah. Now, they had a long time together. Usually people have their children first, and then later the children grow up and they have, and then they become empty nesters. Well, Abraham and Sarah were empty nesters first for the first umpty years, decades. And then later in life, when they didn't think it was possible, they became parents. And then there's Isaac, their son Isaac, and his wife Rebecca. Now, this is an unusual case in that they didn't meet each other until they got married. And you might say she was a mail order bride, where Abraham sent off his servant to go find the bride, and she accepted the proposal, as they say, sight unseen. I know that that had occurred in one of my economics professors in college, where he had never met his future wife until the month before the wedding, and he said the aunts and uncles on each side arranged the marriages. He was from India. They arranged the marriage, and it was, he said, they put us in the same table or a booth at a cafe, and they sat off to the side, and they had 1 hour to decide, never met before, 1 hour to decide if it was okay to get married. And they discussed as whatever they wanted to discuss for 1 hour. But the problem was, if they said no, the families would basically disinherit them. So they had to find a reason to say no. And they realized at the end of their hour of discussion, neither one of them had said no. So they made the preparations and got married the month later. Well, Isaac and Rebecca didn't even have that. It was just a long distance. Boom, she showed up, they got married, and that was the end of that. And then, of all things, they had twins right off the bat when they did have children. Not common that firstborn or twin, but hey, it can happen. So another famous couple of Boaz and Ruth, being from the country of Moab, had an unusual courtship where she married a relative of the in-laws. And they both had positive reputations. He had built up the estate, and Boaz had said, you know, that the word of your diligence is widely accepted. Having gone through those famous couples in the Bible, we're not going to talk about any of those today. Because there's another couple, and we're going to call these a power couple. And so some of you may have read about a power couple called Priscilla and Aquila. And we read about them through the writings of Paul about this particular couple. But before we jump into the details of Priscilla and Aquila, we want to take a look at a place in Greece. In Athens, Greece, and it's called Mars Hill. It's on a hill called the Areopagus, and this is a rocky outcrop. You've heard of the Acropolis, a temple in Athens. This is where the top tribunal or court met in Athens. It's the location of one of Paul's most important gospel presentations during his visit to Athens, Greece, during his second missionary journey. And there he addressed the false beliefs of the Greeks who had placed an altar to the unknown God. And if we take a look as we follow through the history, the unknown God, he said, I know who this unknown God is, the one that you weren't sure about. And that's when he had an opening to explain into it. But then again, we're not focusing on that today, because after Paul had done this, we turn to Acts 18 and verse 1, because we're going to start, pick up the story here in Acts 18 and verse 1, because after this, Paul then went from Athens to Corinth. So I want to give you the context of Paul on this journey, and he was talking with early Christians, or those who were about to be early Christians, as we heard in the message earlier today, about the early church. And they generally started small and grew bigger, and they were in various cities. So Paul departed from Athens and went to Corinth. Now, most of us know where the town next to us is, or the town beyond that, or maybe the state capitals, and those of us in the church that travel know, have some handle on geography. But I wanted to give a graphic display, because Paul went from Athens, where he both had cheers and jeers, and then he walked 52 miles from Athens to Corinth. Now, I walk. I'd like to walk more, but I do walk, and I like to walk on a level surface, but sometimes it's up and sometimes it's down. And if you're going to walk across 52 miles, you'd want to take a look. Well, how long does it take to walk 52 miles? Well, we're in Acts 18, verses 1 and 2. So if you walk 2 miles an hour and you walk for 8 hours a day, it would take about 3.5 days to go the 52 miles. Now, you can get ambitious and walk more the first day, and pretty good the second day, but by the third, fourth, and fifth days, you might slow down a tad. But bear in mind, they had to stop and make meals, or he did. He had to pitch a tent overnight, if there was, otherwise he'd be soaked by the dew or maybe the rain. He'd have to locate water. Just walking someplace, unless you were carrying everything with you, which could be heavy. So he went the 52 miles from one city to the next. And presumably there was a path or a road. The Romans built highways. The Roman Empire did. So they had a path to go on, but you still had to be fed and watered and housed. And so and it was there in Corinth that Paul met Priscilla and Aquila. Now, if you look in verse 2, Acts 18, verse 2, he found a certain Jew named Aquila, meaning he was a Jew, so he had background and knowledge of the what we call the Old Testament, the Scriptures. And he was there with his wife Priscilla, and they were there because the emperor Claudius had kicked them out of Rome. In other words, the Christians had to get out, or they were at risk at the time. And so, and it says, tells us right here, they were from Pontus. Well, just reading it, you wouldn't know where Pontus was. So I looked it up. Pontus is in what we now call northern Turkey, on the Black Sea. So if they went from their hometown in Pontus to Rome, that's between 1,500 and 2,000 miles to get to Rome in the first place, where there were other Christians. Now, I don't know how many of you have walked 52 miles. I suspect none of us have walked 1,500 to 2,000 miles, but they made it. Now, it could have been by ship. They may have had a beast of burden to carry their stuff. They may have ridden a horse, had a cart. We aren't told there. But we do know it's a long way to go. An example would be from walking from here to San Diego would be 1,500 miles. 2,000 miles, that would put us to Northern California from here. However, when they left Rome, Priscilla and Aquila, they went 750 miles from Rome, Italy, to Corinth, Greece. They fled Rome, and now at that time, Emperor Claudius, and he only reigned for about 14 years, But Jews and Christians were evicted in AD 45. Now, you had an option, you didn't have to leave. But it would be very uncomfortable when he fed you to the lions. So it was. So the Jews and Christians left, or many of them left. And so I pulled this from Google Maps to show how far it was. And you'll notice it isn't a straight path. They would have had to have taken a ship across the Adriatic or Ionian Sea in order to go from Italy to Greece, because their lives were at risk had they stayed in Rome. If we go to verse starting in verse 3, when Paul went to Corinth, he stayed with, in Acts 18, verse 3, he was, because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked, for by occupation they were tent makers. Paul was, so Paul became a tent maker, living and working with Priscilla and Aquila. Well, if you take a look then at verse 4 in Acts 18, verse 4, he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and persuaded both Jews and Greeks. So he's working with Priscilla and Aquila every day. And he's preparing messages and going to the synagogue every Sabbath for that. And he was able to persuade both Jews and Greeks. Now, I don't want a show of hands, but how many of us are able to go to some other fellowship and express the truth and then bring back a following? You see what a challenge it was for the Apostle Paul to persuade them. In fact, if we take a look here, the tent makers that they were was hard work. Now, this picture I pulled off, and it looks like they're making tents of fabric. You see, tents were important because there weren't Motel 6s, Super 8s, Days Inn, or any other motels along the way. There were places that people could house, but it wasn't a sure thing. So tents were pretty important. Now, on a trip, there weren't banks with ATM machines, no credit cards in those days. So when they traveled, they had to earn their way, hence they were tent makers. So that meant they had to take their tools with them. Now, bear in mind, the tents weren't made of fabric like we're thinking of going down to a department store today and going to the sporting goods and buying a tent. Many of their tents were also made of leather, meaning, and they may not have had the leather. They may have had to slaughter the animals and get the leather, sell the meat, because the leather tends to be more durable and wind resistant. Well, in order to do this, if they were making a fabric, they had to take their tools with them. And these are a picture of the tools of tent-making tools in the first century. And like I say, some of these were made of fabric, or certainly portions of them, and some of them were made from leather. And of course, that would make them heavy, but if you had a donkey or a horse to pull that along, then you would have some way to carry that as well. Now, if we read in Acts 18 and verse 11, we read that Paul lived with Priscilla and Aquila for a year and a half. Well, and teaching the word God, a word of God among them. So he was preaching and teaching. And you know how challenging it is to live in someone else's household. It changes the dynamic in the household. An example of this, and having been a teacher for over 20 years, you're really happy when a troublemaking student leaves the classroom, because what happens? It's a much calmer place. And then what happens if a new kid comes into the classroom? The dynamic changes. And so the dynamic can change. Now, if I had the full power generally in a class of 25, most teachers would like to get rid of four or five students and everything would be smooth. But you put those four or five together, and you're going to have issues. It doesn't matter really what the personalities, there's always some that will clash. It's no different in households. You bring a stranger in and live in your house, and there will be challenges added to it. And so he had to live a life that was accommodating to his hosts, and they had to be willing to continue to host him. we look in Acts 18, down to verse 18 and 19, it says Paul remained there a good while. Well, we know it's a year and a half. And then he left and went to Ephesus, from Corinth to Ephesus. Well, that's not like going to the town next door, because we read in Acts 19, he came to Ephesus. So if you take a look how he got there, he would have to then cross the sea. He couldn't just walk then to the next town. It's not like going from Athens to Corinth. He would then have to go from Corinth to Ephesus. So I pulled a picture up from that, and he would have to walk back to Athens and then find a ship that would take him to modern-day Turkey, and then walk however far it took to get to Ephesus. Ephesus is about 1,000 miles from Rome. And so Aquila and Priscilla are still a long way from home, and they're a long way from Rome. But it's 318 miles, according to Google Maps, from Corinth to Ephesus. And it looks like more than half of it is on a ship. And of course, that's not undertaken without the possibility of a hazard on a ship. Now, I remember the first time I was on the ocean, and I was with a bunch of guys, and I was going out in Oregon, and I was going to go to the coast, and I was going to do a little deep sea fishing. Well, that was all nice, but I was raised in the middle of the North American continent, and you had lakes, but you didn't tend to get seasick on the lakes. So 3 hours getting over to the coast, and then going out on a ship, and this terrible thing happened. I couldn't see land. It was just bobbing up and down, and no land around. I didn't know if we were going north, south, east, or west. And I did my share of fishing, but after a while, my stomach was bobbing just like the boat. Now, I held on to everything, but I'm thinking, if you're not used to being on the waves, this can be a very exciting time, which it was. And then after fishing that day, it was 3 hours from home, caught a ride with several guys. There really wasn't room in the, and the only place for me was in the back of the station wagon where there was no seat. I'm already wobbling around, and I'm lying in the back of the station wagon. It took me 3 days before that sensation settled down. So I'm thinking of these guys. It looks real short on the map, but this could be a challenge. The next time I think I got on a ship was really in Japan, and it was a one-hour ferry. And that was still going up and down, and I could look out and see the boats, fishing boats. Sometimes you see them, sometimes you didn't. They were bobbing up and down the Sea of Japan some years later. So they took this over 300-mile trip. I would say a majority of it, about half of it, or a little more on the water. And then if we go to Acts 18, verses 20 and 21, Paul had left Priscilla and Aquila. He took them with him, by the way. And when he was ready to leave Ephesus, they asked Paul to stay a little longer. Like, oh, please don't leave us now. But you'll take a note here that he had to have confidence in them to be able to help the Ephesian congregation. Remember, these are all young congregations, new in the faith. Because what does Paul want to do in Acts 18, verse 21? He wanted to keep the feast. He's talking about spring feasts here in Jerusalem. But I'll come back. I'll return to you. And he sailed from Ephesus. Well, for him to go then from Ephesus back to Jerusalem, well, that's a step-by-step process. He could walk. And if he walked, you can walk there from that part of Turkey. He could, and I did this on Google Maps, it's 684 miles on the road, on modern roads, to get to Antioch. And that meant he'd have to cross rivers and streams, if there were, in fact, bridges. at that time. I'm sure there were some. And Antioch was an important, that's where Paul often departed on his journeys from Antioch, an important Christian congregation there, because Antioch was really an outlet for the Far East, the Silk Road from China. So Antioch was a step or a place. And here's a map that shows Antioch's location compared to India and China. And that was a worldwide exchange point. They call it the Silk Road because didn't have any silkworms in Europe or the Middle East or Africa. So silk, very soft, refined cloth, came from China. And so that was the drop-off point, which is really the crossroads of the world. So there were a lot of people from all over the world there, a major trading center. If we look at Acts 11, 20 through 27, we read in the New King James, Barnabas departed for Tarsus to seek Paul, verse 26, and when he had found him, he brought him to Antioch. So early on, and it says, and for that whole year they assembled with the church and taught a great many people, and the disciples were first called Christians in Antioch. So this Antioch congregation was an important congregation. So it's hard to imagine Paul going from Ephesus to Jerusalem unless if he was on land, that he didn't go to Antioch, because that was a foundational congregation back then. So, but if from Corinth, if you looked, it was 684 miles from Ephesus to Antioch, 1,000 miles from Corinth to Antioch. So that home congregation of Paul, that Paul, Barnabas and Paul came from in Antioch, 1,000 miles from the Corinthian, and that was by land. But of course, it's quicker by sea, unless, of course, you get shipwrecked, which was just one of those occupational hazards. So like, you can buy a ticket on the ship, but there's a chance that you better know how to swim and hope everything turns out right. Now, we're in Acts 18. We're going to follow through here. In Acts 18, in starting in verse 24, a certain Jew named Apollos, born at Alexandria. Now, Alexandria is on the Nile Delta of Egypt, across the Mediterranean, a long ways away. Born in Alexandria, an eloquent man, mighty in the scriptures, came to Ephesus. This is where Paul left behind Priscilla and Aquila, basically to help care and feed the congregation spiritual food. Verse 25, this man, meaning Apollos, had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he sought and taught accurately the things of the Lord, though he only knew the baptism of John. In other words, he didn't have full and complete understanding. And so then, if we go to the next verse, we read in verse 26, what did Aquila and Priscilla do? Now, this Priscilla and Aquila were a team. They had been taught, remember, daily for a year and a half back in Corinth by the Apostle Paul, worked with him every day, with him every Sabbath and his teaching. So they had matured in the faith, and Paul left them behind in Ephesus. So now Apollos came, and he was full of energy, enthusiasm, and had a certain level of knowledge. So if we, in verse 26, he, meaning Apollos, began to speak boldly in the synagogue. In other words, he wasn't afraid up to stand up and tell the truth. And when Aquila and Priscilla heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. You notice this is something that they did together. Priscilla and Aquila were a team. And so I'd like to show that this teamwork was respected and honored. If we turn to 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 19, Paul pointed to the example of Aquila and Priscilla in 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 19. The churches of Asia greet you. Aquila and Priscilla greet you heartily in the Lord, with the church that is in their house. Now, I don't know about you, but I haven't been to many too many houses where they held the church in the house. Now, I have some in-laws that had church in their house, but they had a great room that would hold three dozen people and had church services there. But that's the way the early church started. So Paul was saying the churches in Asia, where he's talking about, are the other churches that Paul had on his journeys and circuits in what we would call modern-day Turkey. And those churches are talked about in the book of Revelation as they go through the seven churches. Now, bear in mind, here we're in 2 Corinthians 6:14, we have Paul's instructions. Remember, he was back in Corinth with Aquila and Priscilla many years ago. And he gives the instructions, don't be unequally yoked together as unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? What communion has light with darkness? Paul had an opportunity to recognize that Priscilla and Aquila were equally yoked. They were a team. They were working together. They both had a heart for the truth, and he could trust them. And this is in Paul's second letter to the Corinthians. The Corinthians certainly weren't perfect, but he was pointing out basically what it took to be equally yoked together. In Amos 3, in verse 3, we read from the prophet Amos, that, can two walk together unless they're agreed? Well, this is an important principle that I try to reinforce before people get married, is you really need to agree on a wide number of things. And even then, it's the humans being what they are is a challenge. So they really need to walk together, be able to walk together, have to be agreed to be equally yoked. And we can say that about Priscilla and Aquila. Now, that's the that's Paul's second letter to the Corinthian congregation. He also wrote a letter to the young minister Timothy. And young minister Timothy was following in Paul's footsteps. And we read in 2 Corinthians 4:19, where he's writing to Timothy and he's giving him instructions. He says, you know, greet Prisca and Aquila in the household of Onesiphorus. Now, first I want to explain, Prisca is the formal name and Priscilla is the common name. You know, you might take any name that has a nickname or that's associated with it. Randall and Randy. I have a cousin, Peggy. They call her Peg. In other words, a lot of names have nicknames. Well, Prisca is the formal name and Priscilla is the common nickname. And you say, in the household of Onesiphorus, what's up with that? Well, apparently, Onesiphorus had been martyred. He was killed for being a Christian. And this was on Paul's mind. And he's asking to comfort that household as well, because it says the household. In other words, they lost a family member. And Priscilla and Aquila were still in Ephesus taking care of that congregation at that time. If we look at Romans 16 and verse 3, Paul called upon their example. In Romans 16, verse 3, greet Priscilla and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus. But this is in a letter to the Romans. Now, we know how far away they were. They went from Corinth. They were first in Rome, Priscilla and Aquila, and they left in 45 AD when Claudius was emperor. And they went to Corinth, and then later they went to Ephesus. And so they were gone for some years. But Claudius died, Emperor Claudius, the Roman emperor, died in AD 54. So 9 years after they left Rome, Claudius died. That means the Jews and Christians were able to go back to Rome. So when Paul is writing a letter to the Romans, he now knew and must have known that Priscilla and Aquila went back there. So this is the third congregation mentioned where Priscilla and Aquila were known. Now, if you're going from Ephesus to Rome, thank you for Google Maps. It's 1,277 miles, and it's not all on land. This is as much land as I could get, and still, but they still had to cross the Adriatic Sea. Now, so that was a long trip, and we can do the math. 1,277 miles, let's see, that would what? Put us past Phoenix, Arizona from here. Well beyond Winnipeg, Canada. So it's a ways out there. So each time that we look in the Bible for the six mentions of Priscilla and Aquila, they're always named together. They aren't named independently. This is part of the being equally yoked. They're both called believers. They're both called examples. They're not referred to individually. They were a team. Now you'd say, well, yeah, but Aquila's mentioned first. Well, let's read through a little further. And they're both mentioned first, three times for each one. So you can see that Paul respected and thought a lot of both of them. If we take a look then at Paul's letter to the Romans in Romans 8, starting in verse 16, he's not saying, well, greet Aquila first, and then, oh yeah, by the way, Priscilla. No. He's explaining in Romans 8, starting in verse 16, that husbands and wives, our destinies are intertwined. In verse 16, we are children of God, and if children, verse 17, then heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, that we might also be glorified together. So he's really looking at teamwork where it is possible, as Paul is writing to the Romans. But Paul isn't the only one saying this. We look in 1 Peter 3:7, husbands and wives are heirs together of the grace of life. Their destinies are intertwined, which is why you both have both husbands and wives have a responsibility to do the best they can. Now, if you take a look at Priscilla and Aquila, and you look at how far they traveled from Pontus on the Black Sea to get to Rome, and Rome back to Corinth, and then from Corinth to Ephesus, and then from Ephesus back to Rome, that's a lot of miles. Now, I calculated a couple of different ways. It's not less than 3,000 miles of traveling. Generally speaking, one step at a time, except for when they crossed the sea, and that was a bit more risk. So they had to have had a challenge just in traveling, carrying their tents, their tools. They were self-employed, food, water, and so forth. They were hard workers. Now imagine that 3,000 miles. That's as if they traveled from right here in northwest Arkansas and walked to Juneau, Alaska. I mean, that's the kind of the distance. That's a minimum they would have done. They had a great influence on at least three early Christian congregations that are named, Corinth, Ephesus, and Rome. They influenced an important church leader named Apollos, explained the way more accurately. Apollos knew what he knew, but his knowledge was incomplete, and they were taught by Paul. So I want to give us this overview of this important couple, and we just read across that little glimpses here and there in the Bible about Priscilla and Aquila. But the principles that we can bring from that is that they worked together. They followed Paul's advice. He had confidence in them, and they were willing to travel in furtherance of the truth to be able to build up their fellow early Christian congregations. And make their presence known in a very powerful and positive way. So that's the power couple I wanted to point out today was Priscilla and Aquila. They left a lasting legacy of love and learning, work cooperation, stability, a resource and example. And together they went through all kinds of challenges. If we want to think of a power couple, truly, they were it.